ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ Welcome back. Welcome also to the students attending this class online. We continue this final chapter of Uddhava Gita. Sri Krishna returns to the main topic of the whole Bhagavata Purana, the topic being bhakti. And he concludes. Can I have the slides, please? Thank you. So in the where we left off, he concludes, look at the last line, samudrik panditaha mataha. Someone is considered, pandit here means wise, someone is considered wise when they are samudrik. And the earlier part of the verse shows that when a person sees the same divinity, when a person sees the same divinity, Brahmane, Pulkase, in a Brahmana, or an outcast, in a Stena, a thief, or a Brahmanya, a holy man, in the Arka, in the sun, or in Spulinga, a little spark. So when you can see divinity in everything, in every being. This is the culmination of bhakti, according to Sri Krishna. What's interesting is how he started out this chapter. By the way, if you've missed any classes, all of this is available on our YouTube channel, so you can go and catch up. So at the very beginning of the chapter, do you remember he began by saying, "You should always remember me." And when Sri Krishna says that, he's usually referring to the stories largely that come from this Bhagavata Purana itself, stories of Sri Krishna in Vrindavana running around with the gopis. You know all these stories. And I'm being a little bit lighthearted about it intentionally, because to contrast, that's where he starts. He starts by saying, you should remember me, and let me put some American words in Sri Krishna's mouth. Remember me running around with the gopis in Vrindavana. That's where he starts. And then he goes on to say, you should live in holy places. You should have satsanga. You should associate yourself with saintly people. You can see that this is a succession. In fact, then he goes on to say, I forgot one verse, he said, you should celebrate all the festivals. One of the main ways in which we celebrate all the festivals is with Murti Puja. Look at the succession. We start with a story with a mental image of Sri Krishna running around with the gopis in Vrindavan. That's the starting point. What comes later, he says, you should celebrate all the festivals. So what comes later is a more concrete representation of Sri Krishna, as the focal point of a festival is most often a deity on the altar. So more concrete. Notice we're going from I need a better word than that, because when I say concrete, I'm thinking about the building material. Not helpful. Anyway, but you understand what I mean. Less concrete means merely a mental image to something with more physicality, like the deity on an altar. But where does this culminate? In seeing divinity, in seeing Lord Krishna's presence in every being. Notice the succession. starting with the mental image, moving on to something more concrete, deity. By the way, the deities are made of marble, which is stone, but like concrete. Anyway, bad joke. But look where this sequence culminates, in the discovery of Sri. Actually, I need to make this point. How to recognize Sri Krishna's presence in others. It starts off as belief, Shraddha, just as the stories of Sri Krishna running around in Vrindavan start off as Shraddha, to believe in the sanctity of the deity on the altar is a matter of Shraddha. To see Lord Krishna's presence in living beings starts off as a matter of Shraddha. But then something happens. And what happens as a result of this progression, what happens is you finally discover personally and immediately, you discover Sri Krishna's presence within you. That's the culmination. So these are steps of bhakti culminating in a personal discovery of Sri Krishna's presence within you, which is in Advaita Vedanta, we call that jnana, spiritual enlightenment, to discover your true nature as Satchitananda Atma is the same as discovering Sri Krishna's presence within you. We call that enlightenment, jnana. So bhakti, steps of bhakti culminating in jnana. And just to loop back, and then we'll pick up these verses. To loop back, once you've discovered Sri Krishna's presence here within you, when you look at another person, what will you see? How can you not see? Once you've discovered Sri Krishna's presence within you, you necessarily and simultaneously appreciate Sri Krishna's presence in all beings, which is what he says here. Samudrik panditaha mataha. You are considered wise when you've achieved. Notice he says samudrik, one who sees the same divinity in all beings. Did he say one who believes in the same divinity of all beings? That's where we start. We start with belief and culminate in a personal discovery. In Bhagavad Gita, famous verse, in just a quarter of a verse, in chapter 4, Shraddhavan labhate jnanam. Shraddhavan, one who has faith, labhate, gains. What? Jnanam, knowledge. How clear it is that bhakti leads to personal discovery. Bhakti leads to jnanam, shraddha. Leads to jnanam. Jnanam, not necessarily, the problem is the word jnana gets so many wrong interpretations. Our use of the word jnana here means a personal discovery of Sri Krishna's presence within you. Not any other kind of jnana, that kind of jnana, which we call enlightenment. Okay, that being said, now he's going to describe in this next verse, the pala, the fruits, the blessings you receive having made that discovery. He says, Nareshva bhikshnam madbhavam, Nareshva bhikshnam madbhavam, pumso bhavayato chirat, pumso bhavayato chirat. Spardhasuya tiraskaraha, sahankara viyantihi. Nareshu madbhavam, my existence. not a shoe in all people. Of course, he's going to go on to say not just in people. We'll see that in the next verse. So seeing my presence, actually not seeing, in the second line middle, bhavayantaha, for those who contemplate, for those who meditate, those pumsaha, for those people who meditate on madbhavam, my presence, nareshu, in all people, when abhikshnam, constantly. Those people who are really dedicated to, first, to the discovery of Sri Krishna's presence within you, and secondly, then the appreciation of Sri Krishna's presence in all living beings. What about them? Acharat. Immediately, they are blessed. And how are they blessed? They are blessed by the very end. Viyanti. Certain problems go away. Viyanti means to dissolve certain problems. Which problems dissolve? Sorry, here we go again. Will the problems with your boss or mother-in-law suddenly dissolve? In a manner of speaking, yes. Will your boss or mother-in-law dissolve? Certainly not. After you're enlightened, they are very much present in your life. What changes is they're present in your life, but they're no longer problematic. Really. That's how these teachings work. After all, if your boss is a manifestation of Sri Krishna, if your mother-in-law is a manifestation of Sri Krishna, if you see that immediately, not as faith, but as personal understanding, it changes your relationship, even with your boss, even with mother-in-law. By the way, mother-in-laws get picked on too much. I get that. I really get that, and I'm sorry for that, but it's kind of the stock example. Okay. So here, and Sri Krishna talks about then is, what are those blessings that you receive when you discover Sri Krishna's presence in all? He says, Viyanti, these particular problems go away. What kind of problems? No, beginning of the third line, problems like Sparda. Sparda, rivalry. Trying to be the best. So trying to be the best in your domain. So at the workplace, you want to be the best in your domain. In some place, and in fact, I think Vasanti reminded me of this, sometimes it's wanting to be the best in your kitchen. Women can also have this rivalry. So it's not just a male thing, it's a people thing. So Sparda, rivalry, goes away. Why does it go away? Is Sri Krishna more present in me than you? Samadrik, equally present in me and you. So what's the basis for rivalry? No basis whatsoever. Also, asuya, envy. If we are all equally manifestations of the divine, where's the basis for envy? Viyanti, these problems disappear. Also, tiraskara. Tiraskara means verbal abuse, calling names. So why do people call others names? I like American English nowadays. We weaponize everything. That's a new word. 10 years ago, there was no such thing, or maybe 20 years ago. Today, we weaponize. And here, we weaponize our voice. And you call that person the most despicable things that you can imagine. You weaponize your words. if you understand that person to be a manifestation of divinity, why would you want to hurt them? Goes away, and effortlessly. To make that point, an unenlightened person follows Dharma with effort. We always have to be alert. What will be the here's the thinking of the unenlightened person. What will be the consequence of my action? So before you act, you think, what will be the consequence? Will anyone be harmed by this action? Will anyone be benefited by this action? That is the thinking for following the path of Dharma for an unenlightened person. For the enlightened person, since these problems are absent, the problems that would lead to causing harm to others, the causes are gone. The psychological causes are gone. There is nothing inside to compel an enlightened person to hurt another. Nothing to impel acts of adharma. In the absence, viyanti, these disappear. In the absence of those compulsions, what does the enlightened person need to do to follow dharma? Doesn't need to do anything. The compulsion to commit adharma is gone. Therefore, the enlightened person effortlessly and spontaneously acts according to dharma. Having become freed from these problems, spardha, rivalry, asuya, envy, tiraskara, verbal abuse, and one more, ahankara, saha ahankara, the person who has. And here ahankara not in the in the Vedantic sense of individuality, here in a more vernacular sense of pride. Egoism. So that enlightened person, being freed from these problems, will naturally and spontaneously act according to dharma. That is the blessing of following these. That is the blessing of a spiritual path, starting off with the path of bhakti, a path based on shraddha. Shraddha and bhakti go together, but culminating in that personal discovery of Sri Krishna's presence within. Then, visrajya smayamanan swan, visrajya smayamanan swan, drishyam vridham cha daihikim, drishyam vridham cha daihikim, praname dandavat bhumav, praname dandavat bhumav, ashwa chandala go karam, ashwa chandala go karam. You'll see that last line in a minute. So, actually, start in the second line. This enlightened person. Actually, enlightened or not enlightened. We'll get into this in just a moment. A person, pranamate, should, num is to bend, to bow. So should bow, and in a traditional Hindu context, it means to prostrate yourself on the ground. Dandavat, like a stick. So you prostrate your sashtanga, with eight limbs, eight parts of your body. You stretch yourself out on the ground. It's a form, and you should do that dandavat bhumau, on the ground. Bhumau, on the bhumi, on the ground. You stretch yourself out in reverence of every living being. And here's where we go beyond Nareshu. In every person, Sri Krishna dwells. Well, not just in human beings. What an interesting thing. Suppose there are aliens on some planet out there. We don't know, right? There's absolutely no way of knowing. Could be. What about them? If they are living beings, they too are manifestations of Sri Krishna, but not only aliens, he says, including up to, that is a prefix here, and then the next word is shwan, means dog. So you should do this namaskara to a dog? To a chandala? Outcast? To a go? That's a little easier. Cow? And kara is a goat. So you should prostrate yourself on the ground to all of these. Why? They are all equally manifestations. And that's at samadrik. Equal manifestations. There's no higher manifestation or lower manifestation. There are higher, we can say, forms, higher incarnations. We can consider a human being to be a higher incarnation of a cockroach than a cockroach. But that divinity, what a statement, the divinity is equally present in the cockroach. That's what Sri Krishna is teaching here. Samadrik, to recognize the sameness of divinity of all beings. And then comes, he really wants to drive his point across to Uddhava, his cousin, who's listening very carefully. So he tells Uddhava to do so, visrijya, giving up your concern for swan, swa, that which is yours, your own friends, your friends who are smayamanan, who are smiling. That's literally what it says. So visrijya, ignoring your smayamanan swan, ignoring your smiling friends as you stretch out on the ground and do namaskaram to a dog. What else will your friends do? In fact, they're going to smile. And not only, so he says you should give that up. You should also give up your concern for anything which is drishyam, the appearance of the dog or whoever it is you are. You should give up daihikim, concern about the body. For example, is it the body of someone of a high caste or low caste? That was an issue in Sri Krishna's time, much less so in modern times. And also, and very significantly, vridam visrijya. You should give up your shame. Vrida is shame. You should give up your shame. Doing namaskaram to a dog, give up your shame. Now, that is a stretch. It's a stretch because how can I do, and in front of your friends, right? That's the context Sri Krishna gives. How can you do that? Well, there are two answers. One is, if you're enlightened, who cares, right? Your friends can think anything they want. How does it affect you? You are Satchidananda Atma. You are a manifestation of divinity. So who cares if your friends are smiling? What do they know, right? This is a perspective. So this is the attitude of an enlightened person. Watch this. If you're not enlightened, so if you're enlightened, who cares? If you're not enlightened, who cares? Seriously, who cares? And I want to give a concrete example. In the 1990s, when I was living at my guru's ashram in Pennsylvania, I used to go out a lot and teach. I used to get into this car we had, a very old, big old car, and drive it around myself and go to all these places, Pennsylvania and New Jersey, sometimes in New York, but mostly New Jersey and Pennsylvania. Every week, every weekend, I did a lot of that. And as I'm driving, you know, especially in New Jersey, when you need fuel for your car, gas, who pumps it? In New Jersey. But if you're in Pennsylvania, who pumps it? So, I wear this dress, what to say. So I get out of the car and I pump the gas in this dress. What do the people who are there filling their cars, what do they think? All kinds of weird things. I have no idea. I never asked them. But you can imagine. Some kook in orange bedsheets. How's that? Even then, it was the 1990s. Who cares? Do they know what a sannyasi is? Do they know what a teacher of Advaita Vedanta is? Do they know what Advaita Vedanta is? Do they know anything much about Hinduism? They don't know. If they don't know, they're going to, you know, I joked before, how much do your friends know? Well, these know even less. If they don't know, if someone who doesn't know you at all has an opinion about you, what is the weight of that opinion? It's meaningless. Absolutely meaningless. You know, another example I gave in a class once is if you're babysitting a little child and you do something the child doesn't know, a two-year-old, and the two-year-old is just learning how to speak and knows two words, you dumb. So the two-year-old insults you. Do you get offended when a two-year-old insults you? That's the idea. Who cares? The two-year-old insults you. The people who are pumping their gas in Pennsylvania have a weird idea about who I am. Who cares? Seriously. And anyway, this is an attitude to be cultivated. And I guess that's one of the reasons sannyasis are required to wear this dress. Is it helps you get that message very quickly. It makes you realize that some things are more important than fitting in. Can I say that again? Some things are more important than fitting in, being accepted by your friends. And that's what Sri Krishna is teaching here. Wonderful. No, I'm not suggesting you take this literally. Next time you see a dog, right? That's not really the point. But look at the strong language Sri Krishna uses here. It's really wonderful. Okay, let's continue. Then. Yavat sarveshu bhuteshu, yavat sarveshu bhuteshu, madbhavo nopajayate, madbhavo nopajayate, tavadevamupasita, tavadevamupasita, vangmanah kaya vrittibihi, vangmanah kaya vritti bihi, yavat, until, and you can see tavat beginning the third line, yavat, until then, tavat, for that length of time, yavat, as long as, sarveshu bhuteshu, in all beings, sarveshu, in all bhuteshu, in all beings, madbhavaha, you saw that word before, my presence, my existence, Sri Krishna speaking here, as long as my presence in all beings, na upajayate, is not recognized. Notice it's a counterexample. When as long as you have yet to recognize my presence in all beings. And recognize, we made the difference before between having shraddha, belief or faith in the divinity of all beings, as opposed to jnana, the personal discovery of the divinity of all beings. And Sri Krishna is talking here of the latter, na upajayate. Until you get it, that, and how do you get it? First you get it here, as we said before, right? First you get it here, and then you get it with regard to others. That's how it works. That's enlightenment. But he says, until you get enlightened, tavat, then, evam upasita, then you should worship evam, thus. Thus, you should worship thus. What is thus referring to? The previous verses? The previous verse in which you're supposed to prostrate yourself even to a dog, Sri Krishna says you should continue, not just with that. Actually, evam can go back to the beginning of the chapter. What should you do? We describe those steps of worship. Steps of worship, including living in a sacred place. We remember our joke? You should live amongst saintly people. There are plenty of saintly people in New Jersey. You can't deny that. Nor can you deny the fact that they're not all Hindu either. No shortage of good, saintly people wherever you live. So you should live in the prior verses, in the prior classes we saw, you should live in a place where you can have satsang, where you can have the company of those saintly people. You should attend all the religious celebrations. You should listen to the stories of Sri Krishna and remember his form in Vrindavan and all of this. You should do all conventional religious practices. In the prior verse, that prefix a means up to. It's avadhi. It's creating a limit. So what is the maximum extent of religious practice? And that's what Sri Krishna was describing in the prior verse. To even be able to to have enough shraddha to prostrate yourself before a dog, recognizing the sameness of the divinity in the dog and in you. Not recognizing, having that shraddha, having that faith that the dog is also a divine creation of Bhagavan. That is the prefix a, that is the limit, that is the full extent of the practice of bhakti. And Sri Krishna says in this verse, until it's no longer shraddha based, until it is based on your own personal understanding, your own personal insight. Your worldview undergoes a transformation. Until that takes place, you should engage yourself in this whole range of religious practices, stepping stones to lead you to that recognition. So you should undertake all those religious practices. How? Vak, mana, kaya, vrittibhihi. Vrittibhihi, through the activities of your vak, speech, manas, mind, kaya, body, you should participate in religious practices until then. Now, in the context of bhakti, this is not surprising. In the context of Advaita Vedanta, some people find this surprising. They say, if the goal is knowledge, knowledge of that non-dual reality, what has bhakti got to do with it? The way it's typically said, if everything is Brahman, who can I pray to? The typical, what I joked, hard-headed Vedantin. How's that? By the way, hard head means nothing goes in. Honestly. Allow me to be a little bit poetic here. Somebody who has that position, someone who says, if everything is Brahman, what's the point of bhakti? In spite of the fact that all of the scriptures say, including this one, say that bhakti leads to jnanam. Bhakti leads to acknowledgement, to enlightenment. So when you say, why should I bother with bhakti? It's like, why should I bother following the steps? Why should I bother following the steps? Can you imagine if you want to cook a nice dinner and you want to skip all the steps? Not going to work, right? Well, this is our hard-headed Vedantin. Nothing goes in because they don't do the preparation, including the bhakti, that's required. So poetically, can we say that bhakti maybe makes us a little bit soft? Not this. This. Softens your heart. We can say opens your mind. It's good to have a soft heart and an open mind. And bhakti helps you gain that. Because if your head is hard like that, if you have already prejudged these teachings and how they work, and you've already made the conclusion bhakti is irrelevant to gaining the highest non-dual knowledge, if that's your position, no amount of Vedanta will work without that bhakti. So that's the position here. So with your speech, mind, body, you should engage in all these religious practices. Yeah. Sarvam brahmatmakam tasya, sarvam brahmatmakam tasya, vidyayatma manishaya, vidyayatma manishaya, sorry, vidyayatma manishaya, vidyayatma manishaya, paripashyan, Uparamet, paripashyan uparamet, sarvato mukta samshayah, sarvato mukta samshayah. Start in the third line. Paripashyan, pashyan, seeing. Seeing as opposed to believing. So we made that differentiation. Shraddhavan labhate jnanam. So belief leads to personal recognition. Pashyan, seeing, refers to that personal recognition. Pari, all around, one who completely sees. One who completely sees what? Well, in context, one who completely sees the samadrik, the equal presence of Sri Krishna in all beings, or take it a step further. We said that to discover Sri Krishna's presence with all beings, in all beings, is equivalent to what Advaita Vedanta calls moksha enlightenment. Now, enlightenment There's one more step. One step that bhakti leaves out, and it's found in Vedanta. Remember, bhakti are these stepping stones. Doesn't mean... When I say bhakti is stepping stones, does it put bhakti in a lower position than jnanam? Some people wrongly conclude that. If bhakti is only stepping stones, what I want is the highest knowledge of Brahman. People use that knowledge. Don't bother me with his bhakti. So if they're stepping stones, your goal is here. Your stepping stones, you're crossing a stream. And the stepping stones are leading to the other side. By the way, the other side is para or para, as in para brahma. So the other side. So tell me, are these stepping stones unimportant? Your goal is over here. Take one stepping stone out. Will you reach your goal? Or will you end up in the river? Just one stepping stone. And there are many. Skip any stepping stone and you're in the river. How can bhakti be lower than non-dual knowledge if skipping any little step of bhakti prevents you from gaining that knowledge? This higher-lower business is really misdirected. And I'm kind of making a point because it's commonly heard. You know, people always like to say, whatever they're, I don't know. You know someone like this, where they say, my way of doing things is best, whatever it is. So my way of cooking is best. My way of playing tennis is best. My way of using this computer program is best. It is my way is best. Well, that kind of attitude seeps into spiritual and religious life as well. My way is best. My way of doing puja is best. My way of doing a havan is best. My way of meditating is best. I'm sighing because this is such an unhelpful attitude. You've discovered something that works well for you. Wonderful. But what works well for other people is also wonderful. So we shouldn't be so narrow. It's a really unhelpful worldly attitude. And when you carry it over into spiritual and religious life, it becomes even more out of place, more unsuitable. It's unsuitable in worldly life. It's far less suitable in religious and spiritual. So let's give up this my way is best stuff. There's no place for it. So bhakti then. And just to connect it here, which is best? People ask, Swamiji, is the path of karma best? Is the path of dhyana, meditation, best? Is the path of jnana best? Is the path of bhakti best? You see the problem? Because for me, look at this. For me, only the best will do. Oh, seriously, some spiritual pride happens a lot. Stepping stones. Which stepping stone is best? Does it make any sense? We need them all. Okay, enough said. So the point I'm making is that bhakti, as powerful as it is, leads you to recognize Ishvara, God, as Sri Krishna in whatever form, ultimately leads you to recognize the source of all the divinity which is manifest in everything. I'm trying to work in my guru's words. Let me try to do this. Bhakti leads you to recognize, not Shraddha, but personal discovery of that one God. Then in my, or let's say Ish, let's use the Sanskrit word, Ishvara. Now comes my guru's language, his exact words. It's not that there is one Ishvara, but rather there is only Ishvara. This is a transition from bhakti to jnana. Bhakti is one Ishvara. Wonderful. Advaita Vedanta, there is only Ishvara. It's a big deal, and you get that, to go from one Ishvara to only Ishvara is a huge deal. And Pariprashnan, the enlightened person, the enlightened person is one who sees, one who has discovered, Sarvam Brahmatmakam, first line. One who has discovered that Sarvam, everything, is Brahma Atmakam. Everything consists of Brahman. Everything is Ishvara. Same thing. Everything consists of Brahman. There is only Ishvara. Tasya, for that person who gains, who ultimately becomes enlightened, having gone through all those stepping stones of bhakti, comes out on the other side enlightened, discovers Sarvam Brahmatmakam, everything is Ishvara. How does that person do it? Second line, Vidyaya, through the wisdom. What kind of wisdom? Atma Manisha. Through the Manisha also means knowledge. Manisha, the knowledge of Atma. When Atma comes, Atman is a word. Atma, when it's in a compound, Atma. You notice I corrected myself in chanting. Atma here. Atma Manisha, through knowledge of self. This is not the time for a long Vedantic lecture, but as I said before, when you discover Sri Krishna here, you know that Sri Krishna is there. When you discover, this is Vedanta, when you discover Brahman here, you know there's only Brahman. Parallel. When bhakti leads you to have that, when bhakti leads you to recognize Sri Krishna is here, therefore Sri Krishna is in all living beings. And in Advaita Vedanta, that further step from one Ishvara to only Ishvara, when you discover I am Brahman. Aham Brahmasmi. When you discover that ultimate truth expressed in the Mahavakya, then you get it. There is only Brahman. With this knowledge, having gained enlightenment, then what? Uparamet. End of the third line. Uparamet. You should withdraw sarvataha, from everything. Sarvataha, on all sides. You should withdraw from everything. And here we need to explain that a little bit. Withdraw from everything means you should go into a cave. You should leave your family, job, home. Start walking around like a homeless beggar. If you're enlightened, wouldn't you be smart enough not to do that? I would hope so. Because if you have a comfortable home and a nice family and a good job, why leave it? The whole idea of this idea of sannyasa is as a sadhana, a spiritual practice. That's helpful for some people, but not all people. So for some people, this lifestyle is helpful. For someone for whom that lifestyle is helpful, then let them live in a cave or wear orange bedsheets or whatever they want to do. You know, it's helpful for them, but helpful as sadhana. By the way, the literal meaning of sadhana, most of you know it as a spiritual practice. The literal meaning is a means to an end. That's what in the dictionary, that's the first meaning. A means to an end. The end is moksha. What is the means? All those stepping stones, right? So, which means sadhana, which means this is meant for sadhana. If you're enlightened, you're already on the other side of the river. Who cares about the stepping stones? Tell me, if you're on the other side of the river, are you going to go back out there, pick up one of those stepping stones and carry it with you? What for? When you're enlightened, sadhana reaches its culmination. No need to hold on to anything. Which means, when you're enlightened, why would you want to hold on to certain religious and spiritual traditions in which you should give up your conventional life? Those conventions, especially the convention of sannyasa, is meant as a stepping stone. No need for that. So then what does uparamet mean? You should withdraw sarvataha in all ways. And the meaning is more Vedantic, and here we have to kind of reach back to the prior chapter where Sri Krishna taught a lot of Vedanta, and he explained, and you've heard this explanation many times. It's very simple, very clear, and that is the true source of contentment is within. It's that simple. And you already know, you knew that intuitively before you even heard the word Vedanta. You intuitively knew that the true source of contentment, peace, joy, love lies within. What Vedanta does is help you really get it. Because even though you intuited that the true source of contentment is within, you still pursued contentment outside in so many ways. So your intuition, your insight wasn't sufficient. The teachings of Vedanta take that a step further. So it's not a mere insight or intuition. You truly get it. And when you truly get it, that the true source of contentment is within, how will that change your relationship with the world? Will it make you follow this? It's important. Will you want to withdraw from the world when you discover the true source of contentment within? Notice the words I use. Will you want? Let me paraphrase myself. Will you develop an allergy to worldly activities when you discover the true source of contentment within? What for? The world is what it is. The world is wonderful. The world is also the opposite of wonderful. Aspects of the world are wonderful. Sadly, aspects of the world are also horrible. We sit here in New Jersey on a beautiful sunny spring day. Suppose you were living in Gaza. No food, no water, no home, and wondering when the next bomb is going to fall. Both represent the world in which we live. So is the world wonderful or is the world horrible? The answer is yes. It is what it is, but one thing we know for sure is that the world is not the ultimate source of contentment and inner peace. That we know. Therefore, the teachings of Vedanta lead you. My guru put it in really, really good words. This idea of uparamet sarvataha, withdrawing in terms of attitude. You withdraw your expectations for the world, and to use my guru's language, he liked this. He said, you develop a perfectly objective attitude towards the world and worldly activities. Is the world good or bad? If you're objective, you'll say, yes. That's objectivity. Is the world the true source of happiness? If you're objective, you'll say, no way. Because the world is just an object. That's objectivity too. Fullness and contentment and peace doesn't belong to any object. It belongs here. Grammatically, we use the word subject. Not any object, but belongs to the subject. Okay, let's finish up this verse. So that person who gets enlightened, uparamet sarvataha, withdraws in terms of attitude from the world, being mukta samshayaha, being absolutely freed from doubts. In other words, go back before what I said before. When you didn't even know what Vedanta was, you had already intuited that the true source of contentment lies within. But I think you still had some doubt. Because even though you intuited that the true source of contentment lies within, so suppose you were young and you had this intuition, you probably still wanted to get married, wanted to have a family, wanted to have a career, wanted to go out to dinner, wanted to go to the theater, wanted to go here or there. So apparently you had some doubts about the truth, about whether contentment is here or out there. You think mostly it's here, but maybe, you know, going out for dinner is kind of nice, so let's kind of include that. I'm trying to suggest what is a doubt here. So Sri Krishna says here, the enlightened person is mukta sang, mukta samshayaha, not sangaha. That's also used, but mukta samshaya. The enlightened person has no doubt. Perfect contentment and peace will never be found out there through conventional worldly activities. The true source of contentment and peace lies within the enlightened person, being mukta sangaha. And that's a good place to conclude our class today. Tomorrow, Sunday, we have our Vedanta class at 10 o'clock, satsanga at 11 o'clock, question and answer. Also, let me mention again, once a month, we have an advanced meditation class. That advanced meditation class will meet this coming Wednesday at 7 p.m. If you are a regular meditator, please come and join us. We'll conclude with our prayers. Om Ganana Hantwa Ganapatigam Avamahe Kavingavinam Upamashravastamam Jeshtarajam Brahmana Brahmanas Patahana Shrinvan Utivisida Sadhanam Om Mahaganapataye Namaha Ishvaro Guru Hatmeti Murti Bheda Vibhagine Vyoma Vad Vyapta Dehaya Dakshina Murtaye Namaha Vasudeva Sutam Devam kamsa chanuramarnadam devaki paramanandam krishnam vande jagadguru om sarve bhavantu sukhinah sarve santu niramayah sarve bhadrani pashyantu Ma kashchid dukha bhag bhavet asato ma sadgamaya tamaso ma jyotirgamaya mrityor ma amritangamaya om shanti 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 om tat sat